This past semester, I taught a course at ISU called Social Justice Education. It is a course for master's students who are obtaining their certification to teach secondary grades. For example, the students in the course are becoming middle school or high school science or math teachers. We delve into understanding systems of oppression that operate in society and the role that education plays in reproducing and continuing those injustices along racial, ethnic, and other lines. And the students also learn about how they, as future teachers, can interrupt the institutional structures that marginalize certain groups. One of the goals of the course is to recognize that all of us have a limited worldview, which is based on our own experiences. So if we want to move beyond our biases and assumptions about people, we should work to expand our worldview, move outside our cultural bubble, as we call it in the course. One of the ways the students did that this past semester was to listen to at least 5 episodes of a podcast that would give them the perspective of a group that they were unfamiliar with. Students listened to podcasts with perspectives of people identifying as LGBTQ, people who are Muslim, Native American, single mothers, and others. One of the most popular podcast series that some students chose was called Ear Hustle. It's a podcast made by inmates at San Quentin Prison in California, and it is fantastic. It gives you a completely new perspective on life among men incarcerated in that prison, as well as their lives before and after prison. We highly recommend that podcast to others. It's called Ear Hustle. But after listening to their selected podcast, the students had an assignment in which they chose a social justice issue to investigate and interviewed one or more people about that issue. They then produced their own podcast or radio story. Today we are going to hear one of the radio stories produced by a student in this course. We will hear a segment called Loving the Enemy, written and produced by Sam Patterson.
A quick note before we begin. There are references to war and bombings that may not be suitable for all listeners. Recently, I've been wondering about my grandma's story, my dad's mom. She is Japanese and lived in Japan during World War II. After the war, she married an American soldier. I really wanted to know what her family thought of her relationship. Did they approve of my grandpa? Did they trust him? To get the answer, I sat down with my grandma at my aunt's house on Thanksgiving.
So you have to question to me, So I have to answer.
Yes. She told me about her life, about living in Japan during World War II, and meeting my American grandpa. She also told me about becoming a citizen of the United States. We're sitting in a room upstairs. It's empty, except for a dresser and a couch. My cousin's kids are playing in the hallway. She sits on the floor cross-legged, a small Japanese woman with short brown curled hair, and a tissue in one hand. Kimio Sakai was born in Ashikaga, Japan. Ashikaga is a city an hour and a half north of Tokyo. She was born in Showa 7. This is the Japanese date for 1932. The dates are based on the emperor at the time and how many years he was into his reign.
And I was 11 years old, United States and Japan.
Japan entered World War II December 7, 1941, with the attack on Pearl Harbor. My grandma was actually 9 years old at the time.
It's very bad war. Yeah. It's a bomb is all over. One more day, still it's a war is not finished. I'm not here.
She started telling me what she remembers from that time in her life. She remembers how her house changed, how her siblings were sent off to help war efforts, and about her time in school.
I can see the sky. It's an American airplane bomb. My father put it every window black paper because B-29 that the United States is bombed the airplane. They can see the light come up. And my father, they were up front of my yard. It's more like a cave, maybe 7 feet deep. And, you know, important paper, you know, put inside. That time I was school, yeah. And every time it's a warning, signs come out. We have to run safety press, you know, like tornado.
She then told me about what happened to her older siblings during the war. Her older sister was sent to a factory. She worked with other high schoolers building kamikaze planes. These were suicide planes filled with explosives. Young pilots volunteered for these missions to bring honor to their family and emperor. Her older brother was sent to join the Japanese army and was one of the more than 500,000 Japanese to be imprisoned in the Soviet Union following the war. My dad and grandma say he hated Americans until the day he died. In 1957, my grandma meets her husband in Japan. He happens to be American. He was serving the United States military and was stationed in Japan.
And my husband, that's American, okay, GI, he was military, it's a policeman. He always patrol, you know, so he always stopped to bring for me, he buys some chocolate or cigarette.
She said she didn't know any English at the time, and my grandpa only knew a little Japanese. But the language barrier didn't seem to bother her.
He come pick me up. We went to movie theater.
My grandma's parents and older brother did not approve of her relationship with an American. She said she stopped talking to her parents until she had her first child in 1961.
And we got married in 1959, December 23rd. American Embassy, its secretary tell me it's not easy.
Because my grandma was a Japanese citizen and my grandpa was an American citizen, she had to have many background checks. She said it took about 6 months to finally get married.
So they give me the front book. All American, you know, it's when it go back to the United States and some people don't like it in other country people.
Over the next 14 years, my grandpa was still serving in the Air Force. Two of his assignments were in Korea and Vietnam. In order to be closer to her husband, my grandma moved back and forth between America and Japan. They had three children together. Two girls in 1961 and my dad in 1967. Her children were born on U.S. military bases and were granted dual citizenship in the United States and Japan. In 1973, my grandma and her family moved back to America for the final time. This was the year my grandpa retired from the Air Force. Since then, my grandma has only been back to Japan two separate times. Because my grandma was going to live in America with her family, she decided to become a citizen of the United States.
I have still a Japanese citizen, but I have three kids. I have to take American citizen. I have to study. It's all American Constitution. Big, it's courthouse. One big table, one judge, and he gave me quite a bit of questions. It's not easy. How many Supreme Court? It's one state. How many senators? It's governor. My husband paid $50 too. I got the American citizen. So I'm American citizen since 1987.
My grandma keeps a part of Japan with her in her home. When you look around, you're greeted by a papa-san chair, Japanese bells, a handmade geisha doll, and an oil painting created by her older brother. She is proud to be a Japanese woman. After talking with my grandma, I realized the story I was looking for was not the story I wanted to tell. It's been 2 weeks, and I am still thinking about my great uncle. My grandma's older brother, who served his country in the deadliest war. He fought for his people and protected their safety. He also despised Americans. Who could blame him? His country, his people, his family, they were attacked, murdered, bombed, and interned. During World War II, the United States dropped more than 150,000 tons of bombs on Japan. Over 300,000 people were killed as a result. A seed of distrust was planted during World War II, and only grew throughout the years. The country who stole his sense of safety was generalized to its people. That seed grew and flourished into a prejudice, a hatred for all Americans. How many people have prejudices rooted in this same feeling? A dislike, fear, or avoidance of people who we think threaten our safety. Whether it's a prejudice of a particular gender, race, nationality, or even a group of people and their children trying to seek asylum. We as humans want to protect ourselves, our families, our country. Anyone who has the potential to make us feel unsafe becomes the enemy. It's in our programming. We want to protect ourselves from the enemy, and we justify our prejudices as protecting our own, keeping ourselves and our children safe. And what do we gain from avoidance, ignorance, or hatred? A feeling of safety, a better night's sleep. But more importantly, what do we lose? A friend, a different perspective, an appreciation for another's safety. I think we can all agree the key to happiness is not hatred or ignorance. Dare to do something that challenges a prejudice you have. Hear someone else's story, find a new perspective, expand your social circle. Who knows? You might feel safer knowing everyone else is just trying to find their own happiness.
That was Samantha Patterson interviewing her grandmother as part of an ISU course assignment. Sam is becoming a secondary math teacher. Throughout the course at ISU, the students realized that there is so much more to being a teacher than just the content that you teach. Sam's efforts on this assignment show that as a math teacher, she will be tuned into her students' identities and cultural experiences, as well as their mathematical understandings. Sam also said that she greatly valued the opportunity to interview her grandmother and record her voice and her story. She said she was thankful that now she will have this recording long after her grandmother is gone.